devil gonna say. So the devil, he can just go straight to hell. So the devil, he can just go straight to hell.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Fire season is just kicking off in the western United States, but will there be enough people available to fight the flames when they come? Several members of Congress are protesting to Agriculture Secretary Ann Veneman that the U.S. Forest Service is being shortchanged on funds to fight fires this year. At present funding levels, the Forest Service will only be able to hire about two-thirds of the temporary firefighting help used last year. That translates to some 3,000 fewer firefighters on the lines this summer.
This week, the world's largest earth-moving equipment company, Caterpillar, declared victory when a federal judge struck down an Illinois law banning the use of strike replacement workers. The United Auto Workers Union represents more than 8,000 Caterpillar employees in four states who've been working without a contract since rejecting a proposed six-year deal last month, billed as the company's final offer. In 1995, 13,300 UAW members participated in a bitter 17-month-long strike, which ended largely in defeat for the union after Caterpillar was able to bring in replacement workers.
We're building prosperity for this country. It's a unique moment in our history, and you're living through it.
Those words were spoken by George W. Bush at an appearance at the Timken Company in Canton, Ohio last April. The ball-bearing manufacturer happens to be the largest employer in Canton, and its founder is a big supporter of the Republican Party. So it seemed like a good place for Bush to tout his multi-billion-dollar tax cut package, which he claimed at the time would result in millions of new jobs.
And that's what the whole purpose of the package is. To create the conditions for job growth so people can find work.
What a difference a year makes. Timken just announced it's closing all three factories in Canton, putting more than 1,300 out of work.
The offshoring of U.S. jobs is happening at a faster rate than previously thought, according to a new study by technology analysis firm Forrester Research. In 2002, the firm estimated fewer than 600,000 U.S. service jobs will be lost by 2005. It's since increased that estimate by 40% to 830,000 jobs moved overseas.
Here's today's Daubab Report. The U.S. Trade Adjustment Assistance Act is supposed to provide a safety net of sorts to those who lose their jobs to global competition, like the factory workers who get laid off when a company moves production to Mexico or China. But the Labor Research Association notes that of all the manufacturing jobs lost in the United States in the name of free trade last year, less than 40% received benefits under the Trade Adjustment Assistance Act. President Bush's 2005 budget proposes net cuts to TAA program-related funding.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
I have been to the cross, and I have felt the passion. Not Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion, where viewers get to see a Jesus character beaten to a bloody pulp and then graphically crucified on a cross. No, there's nothing at all holy or redeeming about the cross I have witnessed. It's a political cross. marking the spot in Austin, Texas, where the GOP's diabolical hatchet man, Tom DeLay, beat our state's representative democracy to a pulp. This simple wooden cross, nailed to a telephone pole, is 4 feet high, painted white, and hand-lettered. The crosspiece says, Democracy. The centerpiece says, R.I.P., killed by Tom DeLay on this spot. Tom, of course, is the nutball Republican majority leader of the U.S. House, who stormed into the Texas state capitol last year and used the GOP's total control of state government to ram through a grossly partisan, contorted piece of raw gerrymandering that autocratically redraws our state's congressional districts and steals half a dozen seats from the Democrats. A theft that will alter the balance of power in Washington. Austin has long had its own coherent congressional district, logical for a state capital and a community of shared interests. DeLay's power grab, however, fractures our city into three shards of incoherent districts that are dominated by populations far from our borders. Stand in central Austin at 38th and Ronson Streets, where the telephone pole cross was erected, and you are at the epicenter of the fracture. Step in one direction and you're in a district controlled by San Antonio's Republican suburbs. Step in another direction and you're in a district running 300 miles away to the Rio Grande Valley. Step again and you're in a district controlled by Houston's Republican suburbs. This is Jim Hightower saying, a majority of Austinites now have congressional districts without representation. There once was a revolution over that anti-democratic principle.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to Viagra.com/card. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to Viagra.com/card today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, starting our program today, Wednesday, the 19th of May. Forget the soldiers. I don't mean literally. But, you know, there's all this brouhaha about war crimes and who's done wrong and let's have a court-martial and... We had three generals being grilled today on television, and all of them basically saying, yes, I take responsibility, but it doesn't really mean anything. But forget the soldiers for a moment. We're going to come back to them. Could it be possible that the chain of command, the chain of command in the military begins... at the top, as it were, with the commander-in-chief. George Bush embraced this, you know, showing up on the aircraft carrier, strutting around with, I don't believe he had a sock stuffed in there, but, you know, all that. Anyhow, George Bush embraced this. I am the war president. I am the commander-in-chief. I can even, fly in the back seat as a passenger on one of these little jets to get out to the, you know, the 15-minute flight out to the aircraft. Anyhow, is it possible that our commander-in-chief himself is guilty of war crimes and that this has been a significant and ongoing topic of conversation in the White House for some time? about whether he might be guilty of war crimes and how to give him legal cover so that he can avoid prosecution. This is a startling development, an extraordinary question, I think. Later in the hour, we're going to actually talk with a young soldier who just came back from Iraq about his experiences there. And so, we're going to go from the big picture to the small picture, as it were, but it's all part of the same picture, and I don't think that we can separate the two. And that's what this administration is trying so hard to do. They're trying to say, okay, to the generals, you guys take responsibility. You show up and say, yes, it was all my fault. I shouldn't have done it. I'm responsible. And let's not talk about Don Rumsfeld. Or if we do, yeah, okay, we can pick on Don Rumsfeld, but let's not talk about the president. Now, you can't technically talk about the vice president because constitutionally the vice president doesn't have a role in this. His job is to be the president in waiting, not the assistant president. It's amazing to me how many Americans don't realize this. In the Constitution, the job of the vice president is not to be the assistant president. He's not the number two guy. He's the president of the Senate, which is part of the legislative branch of government. Unless the president becomes incompetent or dies, in which case he shifts and becomes part of the executive branch of government, and his two constitutional duties, the only two spelled out in the Constitution, are to be the president of the Senate, to open the Senate, to close the Senate, and to cast tie-breaking votes, number one, and number two, to periodically inquire about the health of the president. So even if this was Dick Cheney's idea, keeping in mind that he was defense secretary during the Gulf War in 1991, under George Bush Sr., bitterly argued in favor of going to Baghdad and was overruled by Poppy Bush and apparently never got over it. Nonetheless, this thing goes right up to the top. It has to go to the top. How can you have a guy who is the president of the United States, who's the commander-in-chief of the armed forces? That's part of the constitutionally defined job description of the president of the United States. You say there's a failure of leadership, there's a failure in the command structure, there's a failure in the chain of command and command responsibility. It's the president of the United States who's in charge. And now we get this story that Newsweek just came out. I'm not sure it's even on the stands yet. It's on their website. It's the May 17th Newsweek. It probably is on the stands. The White House's top lawyer. And by the way, this top lawyer, this is Alberto Gonzalez, who was George Bush's top lawyer back in Texas, crafted a lot of the kind of sneaky stuff that let the oil companies do what they wanted. Let's have voluntary emissions, and helped get George Bush's gubernatorial papers put into his dad's library so that for the last 5 years they've not been available to anybody who wants to do opposition research. Even though he wasn't a member of his dad's administration, on and on, anyhow. And Gonzalez also being the guy that many people suggest, if Bush has an opportunity to send up an appointment for the Supreme Court, Gonzalez may be on his short list. The White House's top lawyer warned more than 2 years ago, quoting here from this article by Michael Isikoff in Newsweek. This is not, The People's Daily here. This is Newsweek, right? The White House's top lawyer warned more than 2 years ago that U.S. officials could be prosecuted for war crimes as a result of new and unorthodox methods used by the Bush administration. Now, they're not altogether new and unorthodox in as much as many of these methods were used in the Texas prisons, we find. In fact, one of the fellows who was put in charge of some of the prisons in Iraq had formerly worked in the Texas prisons, had moved from there, had been put in, here's the man John Ashcroft tapped to set up the prison at Abu Ghraib, or Ghraib. Now, that immediately sets off a flag for me. John Ashcroft? Anyhow, Lane McCotter is his name. And this from the Center of American Progress. Has a checkered past when it comes to running prisons. McCotter, quote, spent 18 months administering the Texas prison system during a period when the state was threatened with as much as $1,000 in daily fines if it did not make court-ordered improvements. Demonstrating his, some would say, incompetence, others would say lack of commitment to, you know, basic decent human rights. Is the commander-in-chief guilty of war crimes? What will this mean for our future generations? Was the governor of Texas guilty of crimes with regard to prison? Anyhow, here's this guy. 18 months he headed the prisons in Texas. His next job was as director of the Utah prison system in 1997. He was forced to resign after an inmate died from blood clots that formed in his legs while tied naked to a chair for 16 hours. He then became the executive of a private prison company under the investigation by the Justice Department for unsafe conditions and lack of medical care for inmates. The great con job. I mean, the great conservative, you know, dream. Let's privatize everything. We don't need no stinking government. We shouldn't have institutions that are accountable to we the people. No, we can put this in the hands of private corporations. They're outside of our purview. They have the Fourth Amendment right of privacy. We can't snoop on them. Anyhow, he's the guy that John Ashcroft tapped to set up Abu Ghraib. Now, what the heck did Ashcroft have to do? Well, anyhow, back to George Bush. Here we have a January 25th, 2002 memo. Now, keep in mind, this was before the invasion of Iraq by Alberto Gonzalez. It was obtained by Newsweek. It urges President Bush to declare the war in Afghanistan, including the detention of Taliban and Al-Qaeda fighters, exempt from the provisions of the Geneva Convention. Now, the last nation that overtly claimed it was exempt from the provisions of the Geneva Convention. And, of course, now we're operating under the 1947 version, which is the third or fourth. I'm pretty sure it's the third. They're called actually the Geneva Conventions because the first one was written in 1867 and is still in force. But the last nation to claim that they had a category of people. See, basically, the Geneva Conventions say you either have people who are captured in war, and they are prisoners of war, or you have criminals, and they are criminals. And in either case, they're entitled to certain protections. And the reason why we signed on for this is because, you know, we are a decent and humane people. And you know, in a very straightforward fashion, we said, this is how we want our prisoners, our guys, this is how we want our soldiers to be treated as well. You're going to have a war, if you think it's unavoidable, let's at least bring some, you know, what has happened to civilization? Let's maintain civilization. Now, why did Alberto Gonzalez urge President Bush to do something that never in the 227-year history of the United States has ever been done before, which is claim that there is this brand new category of person, an enemy combatant, and that they are exempt from the Geneva Conventions? And, of course, the Geneva Conventions don't even contemplate such a thing. Well, the reason was, here's Gonzalez's memo, notes that the law applies to, quote, U.S. officials, which could include George Bush, and that punishments for violators, quote, include the death penalty, end quote. One key advantage, Newsweek says, one key advantage of declaring the Taliban and Al-Qaeda fighters did not have Geneva Convention protections is that, according to Gonzalez, quote, it substantially reduces the threat of domestic criminal prosecution under the War Crimes Act, end quote. In other words, if you do this, George, you can't be prosecuted for war crimes domestically. The best way to guard against such, quote, unwarranted charges, end quote, the White House lawyer concluded, would be for President Bush to stick to his decision, then being strongly challenged by Secretary of State Powell, to exempt the treatment of captured Al-Qaeda and Taliban fighters from Geneva Convention protections. Gonzalez wrote, your determination would create a reasonable base in law, that being the War Crimes Act, that does not apply, which would provide a solid defense for any future prosecution. In other words, 2 years ago, before the invasion of Iraq, George Bush and his lawyer were figuring out how to avoid George Bush from being prosecuted for war crimes under statutes that include the death penalty. And this over the strong dissent of Secretary of State Colin Powell. As Newsweek notes, the memos provide fresh insights into a fierce internal administration debate over whether the United States should conform to international treaty obligations on pursuing the war of terror. And, perhaps most significantly, according to Newsweek, this all laid the groundwork for the interrogation abuses that have recently been revealed in the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. Should the commander-in-chief stand trial for war crimes? 20 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. Stick around, we'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and community.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Has George W. Bush delivered on his 2000 campaign pledge to run the government more like a business? New reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Office of Personnel Management show that the federal workforce grew by a net 70,000 since Bush took office. And these numbers don't even count contractors who now compete for federal work. Of the 12 million people who work in some capacity for the federal government, less than 2 million are actually employed by government agencies.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for...
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There's a million sad stories on the side of the road. Strange how we all just got used to the blood.
Seems that way in Iraq now, too, doesn't it?
That'll never be told.
Well, we're going to tell one today.
Silent and frozen in the mud.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you. 25 minutes past the hour. The unpleasant fate, the Globe and Mail of Canada documents, the unpleasant fate of Najim Abed Mahdi, an English teacher from the southern port of Umm Qasr. It's a little town in southern Iraq, if you are not familiar with it. It's where they export the oil. It's not as unusual as it might seem of the 43,000 Iraqis who've been imprisoned at some point during the U.S.-led invasion last year. Only... guess how many have been prosecuted out of the 43,000 that we have arrested? Or have even been subject... actually, no prosecutions have happened. Have been lined up for... 600 out of 43,000 people. The vast majority, including many of those who are subject to abuse, are completely innocent. An estimated 70 to 90%, according to the International Committee of the Red Cross, which has no axe to grind in this thing. This guy was a teacher of English. He spoke fluent English. He was well known in his hometown of Umm Qasr. He was the first person in his town to criticize Saddam Hussein and give his support to the U.S.-led coalition. He led the effort to welcome the soldiers. He worked so hard for the coalition that they gave him a certificate of achievement for his exceptional service and loyalty in the rebuilding of Iraq. It's hanging on the wall in his home. But last fall, while he was visiting some relatives in Baghdad, the army came through the neighborhood, swept it, took all the men of his, you know, all the men who were of fighting age, tossed them into Abu Ghraib. Here's this guy, and he's saying, hey, I don't live here. I live in Umm Qasr, and I speak English, and I'm an English teacher, and you guys even gave me a certificate. They said, hey, tough, two meals a day. He said when he needed to use the toilet, he had to walk barefoot through grounds that were often swampy when it rained. The conditions were very bad, he said. Shortly after his arrest, a prison guard told him unofficially that the arrest was a mistake, yet he remained in jail for 5 months and never received a formal apology when he was released. Another one of the detainees at Abu Ghraib. And I'm reluctant to even call these people the right in America because I actually have some respect for principled conservatives. But here's this guy, Michael Weiner, stage name Michael Savage. This is what 6 million people heard about folks like him.
And I think there should be no mercy shown to these subhumans.
Subhumans, yeah.
I believe that 1,000 of them should be killed tomorrow.
So do you remember, you know, the last time this kind of conversation happened? The last time a country said we're exempt from the Geneva Conventions? It was Germany in the 1930s!
I think 1,000 of them held in the Iraqi prison should be given a 24-hour trial and executed. I think they need to be shown that we are not going to roll over to them. It won't happen. It won't happen because of the CBS communists. It won't happen because of the CNN traitors. It won't happen because of the MSNBC empty heads. And we the people are the ones who are going to suffer today.
Yeah, we the people are the ones who are going to suffer because our standing in the... our ideal of... our ability in the United States to live in a democracy and freedom and peace and to know that the police are not our enemies, that they are here to protect, to serve and protect, as it usually says on the badges... is based on this whole notion of the rule of law. And when George Bush sits in the White House with Alberto Gonzalez and says, how can we subvert the rule of law so that if Kerry gets elected, I don't get prosecuted for war crimes? And then that echoes all the way down the chain of command to a prison in Iraq. You know, we are in a whole world of trouble. A whole world of trouble. This is a road that we watch the Germans travel down, and it's not a road that we want to see America travel down. It is vital. It is imperative for our children's survival, if nothing, the quality of life, for the survival of democracy in the world, that we recover our moral compass in this country. This is Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Five SUNY Purchase students and one alumnus are conducting a hunger strike demanding the university's food service provider, Chartwell's, sign a card check agreement allowing 80 workers to unionize and all students charged as a result of a peaceful protest on March 31st be given clemency.
Workers have been upset about low wages, poor benefits, especially health benefits, and they have to buy into a plan, which works out to be about half of their take-home pay every 2 weeks just for single coverage.
John Harto is a union organizer with the Civil Service Employees Association, Local 1000. He describes the incident that sparked the organizing effort.
A woman who was hired as a dishwasher, who was 5 months pregnant, who was forced to unload boxes off of the back of a truck. When she complained that it was too strenuous for her because of her pregnancy, she was told that initially she was only going to be doing it for an hour, but they forced her to do it for the whole day. Subsequently, she miscarried.
Rose Goldstein Bookbinder, a sophomore political science and Spanish major at SUNY, explains what happened on March 31st.
It began as like an educational kind of rally where people could learn about what's going on, and then we followed by marching through the dining hall. We knew that the CEO of Chartwell's was going to be on campus, and we were going to ask him to sign the card check and neutrality agreement, and we went into this room to present him with the petitions and also an award that was the top banana award, and it said SUNY Purchase's worst employer. So about 30 of us entered into the room before they blocked it off but with police. So we found ourselves just stuck in this room. Them bringing in the police just escalated the situation, and we found ourselves being arrested.
She, Jessie Lear, a junior women's studies major at SUNY Purchase, was approached by cafeteria workers for help with abusive working conditions. He was arrested on April 3rd.
I came to my dorm room. My roommate said the police had just come by. I called the station. They came back and they got me. Finally, after all this time had passed, they told me I was being arrested. I said, why? And they said, for March 31st. And I said, I don't understand. I didn't do anything. Why didn't you arrest me that day or the day after when I met with you or the day since when I repeatedly met with police about protests and about how we can make sure that nobody got arrested? And they said, well, it just wasn't processed till now. And they said that they were being nice to me because they could charge me with inciting a riot. And I said, that's ridiculous because I dispersed the crowd personally when you asked me to. And they said, well, that was too little too late.
He has filed multiple unfair labor practice charges against Chartwell's and is calling for an end to union busting activities and recognition of the union if the neutral third party verifies that a majority have signed union authorization cards. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner in New York.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
He took all the trees and put them in a tree museum.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Yeah, you don't know what you've got until it's gone. Sometimes that applies to things like democracy. Sometimes that applies to things like, you know, our sense of ourself, our sense of what we can and what we are willing to do and how we participate. I'm very honored and very pleased to have with us today for a short while Staff Sergeant Jimmy Massey, an American hero in my mind. Jimmy, would you prefer that I called you Jimmy or Staff Sergeant? I know you're retired now.
Right. Yeah, you can call me Jimmy.
Okay, Jimmy That's Massey. Fine. And you know, for 3 years, you were training Marines in Marine boot camp. Is that right?
That's correct. I wasn't officially a drill instructor.
Yeah.
My job, I was an infantry instructor.
Yeah.
I taught the recruits basic infantry skills, rappelling, the gas chamber, and at that time also the crucible.
Yeah. I got to tell you guys in the Marine Corps, I went through boot camp in the Air Force in the 60s, and our TI was a Marine DI formerly. And he was a scary guy. Boy, was he a scary guy. Anyhow, you just came back from Iraq. And one of the things that really caught my attention was that you actually stood up to a commanding officer, to a commissioned officer, on some of these issues, and that has led to your departure from the military in ways. Not like you were dishonorably discharged. You have an honorable discharge.
I was honorably discharged.
Yeah, you served your time and got out. But you confronted your commanding officer about a few things that you saw there. You want to tell me the story about that?
It was shortly after Baghdad when we had left Baghdad is when I first approached him.
This was after the initial invasion?
What's that?
This was after the initial invasion of Baghdad?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
We were in the process of moving back down south towards a town called Karbala. And that was, of course, after the initial invasion. But what led up to this discussion between my lieutenant and I was we just got done with our daily morning battle plan, and he had said something to me that kind of struck me wrong, and my mental state at that time wasn't the best. I had witnessed a lot of civilian casualties that happened in and around Baghdad.
Yeah, now the phrase...
Pardon me. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The phrase that's so often used in the military now, you know, the nice, clean euphemism is lighting up. Let's, you know, light up those guys, light up that truck. Tell us about, you know, what does it mean, you know, lighting up a vehicle, and what was your experience of that?
Lighting up is just a slang term that Marines use to mean that you are discharging your weapon towards the enemy.
And it's not just a single shot. This is like just blow that thing away, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay. Correct.
Yeah. And you were involved in a few situations where vehicles and people got lit up.
That's correct.
You want to tell us about that?
The most disturbing. I have a hard time talking about it.
I understand.
So just bear with me.
Sure.
The most disturbing event happened near the Baghdad Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
We had rolled into along the highway, and 37, the convoy, we were basically providing security for 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines convoy on our way up into the heart of Baghdad. So our responsibility was to block off a highway while the rest of the battalion fell in on this open field next to the major highway.
Yeah.
As soon as we got our vehicles in a staggered formation and we got everything set, we pushed our snipers out into their positions, and shortly after we got set, we had actually taken an ambush where one of my machine gunners had noticed a group of Iraqis with RPGs. So the lieutenant gave the permission to open up and fire. Now, the Iraqis with RPGs were approximately about 400 meters away from the area where the Amtraks, or 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines, was staging.
Mm-hmm.
So we saved, you know, a big catastrophe.
By taking out the guys with the RPGs.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were a known enemy combatant that we actually confirmed, you know, with our eyes.
Right.
Shortly after that, you know, we were feeling a little exhilarated and everything because we actually shot at some bad guys.
Yeah, I mean, it was victory in battle, and that's what you're trained for.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because prior to that, we were lighting up civilians.
Hmm.
So, you know, we felt good. We were like, okay, well, actually, you know, maybe we're making some progress here.
Hmm.
But shortly after that incident, a red Kia Spectra comes speeding down towards our checkpoint, and we fired warning shots in the air. The car didn't stop. My Marines decided to light the vehicle up because the car wasn't slowing down or coming to a complete halt. And we did have signs out in Arabic that we had made prior to us going into the invasion of Iraq that we made back at LSA 7 in Kuwait. But the signs obviously weren't working, and they weren't, the cars weren't slowing down.
Do you think it's because people were afraid or they didn't understand them or?
You know, that's a good question. Every night, or pretty much every day, I ask myself that same question. I don't, as much propaganda and leaflets that were dropped prior to the war and during the war, the psychological ops teams that were going into the Iraqi town, you know, telling them to, you know, lower down their weapons, you know, with their hands up and so on and so on.
Yeah. Not to mention all the BS that they'd gotten from Saddam himself. So anyhow, to finish your story, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Okay. So the red Kia comes speeding into, you know, our green zone, and we lit it up. The car came to a stop about 30 meters in front of my Humvee. My Humvee was always in the middle of the convoy because I carried the snipers, and I was basically like a refueling as well as supply Humvee for our CAT team.
Mm-hmm.
So the Kia came to a stop. Three of the occupants were badly wounded. The driver jumped out of the car with his hands up, and right then and there, we knew that we made a mistake.
Yeah.
That, you know, these were not the bad guys.
Yeah.
So we started pulling the bodies out of the car, and they were still alive, the other three occupants. So we called the medic, the corpsman, and the corpsman came over and started using, you know, emergency first aid on them.
Mm-hmm.
to revive them. We got the Iraqis out of the area. However, the one gentleman that was unscathed, he looked up at me and he goes, you know, why did you do this? Why did you kill my brother? You know, we didn't do anything to you.
Ooh.
And my Marines were searching the car at the time, trying to find explosives or weapons or anything like that, and we found nothing.
Yeah.
So,
was this a turning, Jimmy? Was this a turning point for you, or was this the beginning of?
Yeah, that was a turning point as far as me totally questioning what we were doing and what we were trying to accomplish at that point.
Now, you had mentioned just a second ago that just before you'd taken out the guys with the RPGs, that you said prior to this we were lighting up civilians. What did
Correct.
You mean? What did you mean?
There was another incident that happened in between two Iraqi military compounds, and I'm going to try to give you the geography of how the layout is because it's very important in the telling of the situation. there was a four-lane road, and on both sides of the road, you had about a 12-foot-tall concrete wall.
Mm-hmm.
And behind the walls were military Iraqi compounds.
Mm-hmm.
Looking straight down the road, there was a huge overpass, a highway overpass, and there were some demonstrators that had gathered underneath the overpass. And when we pulled up, there was already an Abrams tank that was parked to the entrance to the military compound on the right-hand side.
Now, this was a demonstration, like as in a political demonstration. This wasn't a bunch
Correct.
Of people. This was not a bunch of combatants. This was civilians
Correct.
Out there with signs and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Just like we have, you know, every day in America.
Right. Okay.
So the tank was lodged in between an Iraqi vehicle, a military vehicle. It was like a tractor flatbed. In the back of the tractor, it had a canopy tarp going over it, and it was loaded with AK-47s, RPGs, hand grenades, just a various assortment of small arms and ammunition. So this tank was parked in between. And the demonstrators weren't doing anything. When we had rolled up, that tank was totally defenseless. If the demonstrators wanted to do something or retaliate, they could have very easily taken out that tank, because the way that the architecture was, there was also a...
This is one of your tanks.
What's that?
This is one of your tanks.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Also, in the middle of the road, there was about a 10-inch curb. Now, the way that they designed it, it was very difficult for our Humvees to get in and over.
Right. The tank was there. It was pretty clear to you that these were just peaceful demonstrators who were just trying to say their say.
Right.
And no hostile intent. And then what happened?
Right. We staged our vehicles in a staggered formation, and my lieutenant was at the head of the convoy. We were probably about 200 meters away from the demonstrators next to the tank. My lieutenant's vehicle was parallel next to the Abrams tank. All of a sudden, I heard a gunshot, and then my Marines proceeded to open up on the demonstrators. So after that happened, my lieutenant and some of our machine gun vehicles, we decided to go do a recon up the road to where the demonstrators were, and also go up onto the highway overpass.
Mm-hmm.
So as we were passing by the bodies, I didn't see any weapons. I saw, you know, a picture. They were holding pictures of Saddam. Some of it was in Arabic and English, and it also looked like they had a picture of a cleric.
Yeah.
And as we pulled up onto the overpass, I noticed that there was RPGs that were lined up against one of the concrete pillars on the overpass. The Iraqis were within about 100 meters that were holding the demonstrations from grabbing these RPGs and firing them at us if they wanted to.
But clearly they didn't want to. They didn't do it, right? I mean, is that your logic?
Yeah. They had every opportunity to destroy that Abrams tank prior to us getting there, because that Abrams tank was sitting all by itself. The only firepower that it had on it was a 50-caliber machine gun.
Right.
But if the Iraqis wanted to fire, they could have snuck through the empty compound and staged behind a tree and got a good shot at it.
So, Jimmy, who gave the orders to wipe out the demonstrators?
The warning shot.
And where did the warning shot come from?
That's the mystery shot. I don't know.
Came from your side?
Don't know. You heard sporadic gunfire all the time.
Yeah.
Now, what led, you know, you're probably thinking to yourself, what led a bunch of Marines roll up on a situation and then hear a gunshot and open fire on a bunch of demonstrators?
Yeah.
It kind of sounds a little hokey, right?
Well, go ahead. Yeah.
All right.
Scary times, I was going to say, but.
Right. However, when we prior to us going into this compound, we started receiving intelligence reports saying that the Iraqis, had basically thrown all their uniforms out. They were fighting in civilian clothes. That Iraqis were using civilians, the Republican Guard and the Fedayeen were using right. the civilians as human shields. That they were stealing ambulances and loading them up with all these explosives and just mounting massive resistance attacks against American forces using guerrilla and terrorist tactics.
So you had all these concerns, but that turned out not to be the case in this situation.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Okay.
So with all of that anxiety and all of this, plus with the lack of sleep, some of us have been up for over 48 hours, and, hearing all these intelligence reports, when you place Marines in that type of situation, it gets ugly.
It does, yeah. Jimmy, we got to take a break for a few minutes, and then we'll be able to wrap this up. I would like to ask you what your thoughts are about George Bush's assertions of weapons of mass destruction and the other GIs there, and also if you're getting any help yourself on some of this trauma. Hang on, this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be right back.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Large numbers of young people are found to be a destabilizing force in developing countries. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Poverty and scarce resources have long been thought to be the driving forces behind most social unrest, but a new study finds a more important factor, young people. Robert Engelman is a vice president of Population Action International, a nonprofit group that conducted the study.
Those countries were much more inclined to have a higher risk of conflict if they also had high proportions of young people, specifically young men. Societies that had more than about 40% of their adult population in the age group from 15 to 29 we're significantly more prone to conflict.
Engelman says that youth bulge becomes even more dangerous when it concentrates in cities.
We also found another connection that we really hadn't anticipated, which was the speed of urban population growth. When urban populations are growing by about 3% or so, which quite a few urban populations are in the developing world, those countries were much more likely to be experiencing conflict.
Engelman says countries like Haiti, Somalia, and Colombia have the most dangerous combinations of risk factors.
And the countries that were most vulnerable to conflict were countries that had all three of these factors working against them. Significant proportions of young people, significant scarcities of either cropland or water, and significantly rapid urban population growth.
The Population Action Study urges international aid programs to target more help for societies with a youth bulge. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Some say they go into a place called glory, and I ain't saying it ain't a fact. But I've heard that I'm on the road to purgatory, and I don't like the sound of that.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're speaking with Jimmy Massey, retired staff sergeant, 12 years in the United States Marine Corps, just back from Iraq. And Jimmy, you've talked about participating I want to portray you. In my mind, you are a hero. You are one of the true American heroes. You're particularly because in seeing this situation and you stood up and you spoke out and you're continuing to. And I want to honor that. And that you saw the killing of civilians, the tossing of the bodies of civilians into ditches, that you participated in those things, as I recall. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
That's correct.
And that when you confronted your commanding officer about the killing of civilians, you said he didn't like that, he got up and stormed off, and you knew then that your career was over with the military. I'm wondering what thought, and I'm sorry, we've only got about 2.5 minutes here left in the show here on this segment, but what it must be that the soldiers over there have come to the conclusion that the evidence on which this war was based was fabricated, you know, that there were no weapons of mass destruction. Or if they were, I mean, we might find a sarin gas shell here and there, but it didn't represent
right.
an imminent
Leftover
threat.
From the first.
Yeah, and it didn't represent an imminent threat to the United States that would justify the death of nearly 800 of our soldiers. What's the response been of many of your peers, and what do you think about this? Who do you hold responsible for this?
I hold the President of the United States responsible because, you know, he's the one that overall, put the ball in motion for the invasion of Iraq. And, you know, he was receiving intelligence reports as well that put the ball into motion. So, and those intelligence reports, continuously, were submitted out all the way down to, the private. So in the average grunt platoon in the Marine Corps.
So you guys really believed that stuff was there?
Oh, yeah, wholeheartedly.
Yeah. So you were on a holy mission. There's weapons of mass destruction here. These guys are going to destroy New York City all over again. We got to stop them.
Got it.
And then and at what point do you think that the average guy, we've got about 30 seconds here, at what point do you think the average guy in Iraq came to the conclusion that maybe that wasn't the case?
When we got into Salman Pak. Salman Pak was supposedly the terrorist training, Republican Guard headquarters, the Fedayeen headquarters. And if you go back and you research when 37 actually went into Salman Pak, there was nothing.
There was nothing.
The place was deserted.
Yeah. Staff Sergeant, former retired Jimmy Massey. Jimmy, thank you so much for being with us on the program and for having the courage to speak out here in these perilous times. I appreciate it. Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Fire season is just kicking off in the western United States, but will there be enough people available to fight the flames when they come? Several members of Congress are protesting to Agriculture Secretary Ann Veneman that the U.S. Forest Service is being shortchanged on funds to fight fires this year. At present funding levels, the Forest Service will only be able to hire about two-thirds of the temporary firefighting help used last year. That translates to some 3,000 fewer firefighters on the lines this summer.
This week, the world's largest earth-moving equipment company, Caterpillar, declared victory when a federal judge struck down an Illinois law banning the use of strike replacement workers. The United Auto Workers Union represents more than 8,000 Caterpillar employees in four states who've been working without a contract since rejecting a proposed six-year deal last month, billed as the company's final offer. In 1995, 13,300 UAW members participated in a bitter 17-month-long strike, which ended largely in defeat for the union after Caterpillar was able to bring in replacement workers.
We're building prosperity for this country. It's a unique moment in our history, and you're living through it.
Those words were spoken by George W. Bush at an appearance at the Timken Company in Canton, Ohio last April. The ball-bearing manufacturer happens to be the largest employer in Canton, and its founder is a big supporter of the Republican Party. So it seemed like a good place for Bush to tout his multi-billion dollar tax cut package, which he claimed at the time would result in millions of new jobs.
And that's what the whole purpose of the package is. To create the conditions for job growth so people can find work.
What a difference a year makes. Timken just announced it's closing all three factories in Canton, putting more than 1,300 out of work.
The offshoring of U.S. jobs is happening at a faster rate than previously thought, according to a new study by technology analysis firm Forrester Research. In 2002, the firm estimated fewer than 600,000 U.S. service jobs will be lost by 2005. It's since increased that estimate by 40% to 830,000 jobs moved overseas.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The U.S. Trade Adjustment Assistance Act is supposed to provide a safety net of sorts to those who lose their jobs to global competition, like the factory workers who get laid off when a company moves production to Mexico or China. But the Labor Research Association notes that of all the manufacturing jobs lost in the United States in the name of free trade last year, less than 40% received benefits under the Trade Adjustment Assistance Act. President Bush's 2005 budget proposes net cuts to TAA program-related funding.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
It's always good to get reassurances from high government officials on issues of great concern to the people. Take the nagging issue of U.S. corporations offshoring hundreds of thousands of well-paying, high-tech jobs out of our country, the very jobs we were told would be our people's ticket into the middle class. But now, the CEOs of Dell, Microsoft, IBM, and the rest are shipping these engineering and programming jobs off to India, Russia, and other locales where they can pay a third or a fourth or even a tenth of the middle-class pay scale in the U.S. Hey, they say, America's a great place, but we're going to go where we can fatten our bottom lines. This self-serving betrayal of America's middle class has, to put it nicely, annoyed many, many Americans. This is where Colin Powell steps in. Bush's Secretary of State recently sought to reassure the people on this issue of offshoring. Unfortunately, the people he reassured were in India. On a recent trip there, he promised that the Bushites would do nothing to stop the outsourcing of U.S. high-tech jobs to India and, indeed, would oppose all congressional efforts to stop it. He even posed as an economic philosopher, declaring that, quote, outsourcing is a natural effect of the global economic system, adding adamantly that you're not going to eliminate outsourcing. Well, we're certainly not going to eliminate it if our government won't fight for our people. Oh, but Powell said, while these kinds of dislocations will take place, the Bushites plan to train the American people for new jobs. What new jobs exactly? He didn't say. He didn't have a clue. But Bush's Labor Department knows. It lists 30 job categories that will have the greatest growth between now and 2010. Number one, fast food workers. Two-thirds of their growth jobs pay less than $20,000 a year. This is Jim Hightower saying, forget high tech. Colin Powell envisions you in a hairnet.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friend. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, and on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina. The Young Turks, one of the up-and-coming, would you call it liberal talk radio or liberal radio, Cenk?
I pretty much call it liberal radio, yeah.
There you go.
We do a lot of things. We do pop culture and current events, but we definitely slant liberal, especially when it comes to the Bush administration.
Great. Cenk Uygur is the co-host of the program, along with Ben Mankiewicz, is it?
Correct. Right. Nicely done, though.
Yeah. YoungTurk.com, www.YoungTurk.com, your website. You're on the air in Pennsylvania, Kansas, on Sirius Satellite. Doing a great show. What do you think is the future here of liberal talk radio, as it were, liberal radio in America? Do you see, is it growing? I mean, even Howard Stern now seems to be taking a turn, although maybe this is just an anti-Bush rant on his part. But it seems like, you know, people are saying, hey, you know, more than half of America voted for Al Gore and Ralph Nader last time. Why isn't anybody programming radio to these people?
Well, Tom, I find the whole proposition comical. You know, I've gone to these talk show conventions for a long time now, and they always talk about how liberals can't do radio. liberals can't be entertaining. I remember a talk show by the name of a girl, I think it's Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
I think she did fairly well.
Yeah, well.
Other liberal entertainers, Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Bill Cosby, they seem to have had pretty good careers.
Yeah, well, that's all TV.
Of course liberals can do entertainment.
Yeah, but that's all TV. But, you know, where this all started, of course, you know, we had, back in the 1930s, there was Father Coughlin and his famous, "It's Roosevelt or Ruin" speech, right? I mean, you know, many people credit this liberal talk show host who later became a Nazi, basically, but he started as getting Roosevelt elected. And then, of course, before Rush, there was Alan Berg. He was heard in 34 states before he was machine gunned to death in his driveway. You know, extremely liberal. And so, you know, it seems like
not how we wind up, Tom. Yeah.
Well,
me and you.
Oddly enough, you know, a couple of months ago, we went out and one of the windows of my car was smashed in. I thought, somebody walked by with a baseball bat. A week or so later, I looked more carefully. There were two bullet holes in the side of the car, so let's hope not.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm dead serious. I'm guessing it was just kids on, you know, joyriding and they were shooting at cars. I'm not, you know, particularly
paranoid.
That
kind of violence, and you're still a liberal, Tom. When you look at that, you're never going to learn, are you?
No, I'm sorry. I'm always willing to look at the bright side of things here. I have a hard time.
We haven't had any death threats on the Young Turks yet, but we did get a love letter, so we got the love.
Hey, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good start. What do you think makes good radio?
Look, it's cliched, but it's so obvious. It's entertainment. I mean, you're not... The politics is a nice thing to start with, and it gives you a lot of fodder because especially this Bush administration is incredibly amusing. It's a little sad sometimes as well, but it's amusing mainly.
Yeah, sort of a tragic
but you can
comedy.
Use anything as fodder, but the whole point is entertainment. If people, you know, people are coming home stressed, like we do a drive time show, afternoon drive time on the same channel as you on Sirius Left 143. People coming home, they want to relax. They want to enjoy themselves. They're not going to necessarily turn into polemics, but they are going to turn into something that's going to make them laugh or maybe even make them angry, but at least move them in some way.
Yeah. Jack, let me play a quick spot here for you. It's just a little piece. It's 20-some-odd seconds that Media Matters just put together. I'd like to get your thoughts on this and how you guys would respond to it, because your show is somewhat different than mine. I mean, you're a little more of the high-speed drive time stuff, and we're doing a little more of it. Anyhow, just listen to this.
Secretary Rumsfeld called the torture of Iraqis sadistic, cruel,
fundamentally un-American.
But here's what Rush Limbaugh said.
This is no different than what happens at the Skull and Bones initiation.
I'm talking about people having a good time. These people, you ever heard of emotional release? You ever heard of need to blow some steam off?
This is the most listened to political commentator in America? Read more at MediaMatters.org.
This is an ad that Media Matters is putting. How do you guys handle with this kind of stuff?
All right, well, Rush Limbaugh is completely out of control, and it's about time that somebody picked up the ball and started exposing him for the kook that he is.
Yeah.
First of all, if he thinks it's such a good idea and such a fun time, let's take his clothes off and stick a light stick up his butt and have him parade around in homosexual poses and see how much he thinks it's fun and blowing off steam and a little fun prank.
Well,
him and Hannity together and put O'Reilly in a human pyramid. Let's see what kind of fun they have.
Well, you know, with all the rumors about him actually being gay, I mean, maybe he has already done that stuff. You know, it's
maybe that's why he thinks it's so much fun. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know those.
That would make sense.
I do know that Rush is despicable. He went further than those comments. He talked about how, you know, he says the prisoners, but of course he generally means all the Muslims in the area. He said they're the sick ones, they're the perverted ones. He called them subhuman and human scum.
Yeah.
Come on, it's the same kind of talk we heard from propaganda from the National Socialist Party. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that was Michael Savage in particular was doing that. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the air. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, you're on the line with Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks and Tom Hartman.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, butt problems are how Rush got out of Vietnam. So
that's right. He had a pimple on his butt, and that got him a deferment out of Vietnam.
As someone who's done talk radio from the liberal perspective, and I was supposed to talk with Rush about this yesterday, but the last minute his call screener jumped on the line and said, no, we're going to talk about Iraq instead. And I went, okay, what the hell, whatever gets you on the air. As someone that's done this, I wanted to bring up Air America, and I know neither of you have anything to do with that. But it has always seemed to me that concept that they brought forth just simply isn't going to work. You cannot build radio from the top down. You can't simply appear on the scene, expect to have a national audience. It's not the way that radio works at any level. Or do you disagree?
Yeah.
Well, I got some thoughts on that. I think, look, what they're doing is very difficult. I wish them a lot of luck, but you need a tremendous amount of capital to buy some radio stations and buy all the talent you need for the stations and the sales teams. And I've been in startups like that in television as well. I worked with USA Networks when Barry Diller tried to put together his seventh network.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you run out of money real, real quick.
Yeah, the burn rate is incredible. Now Salem Radio Network actually has done pretty good from the top down. You know, I mean, they started out as a Christian Broadcasting Network, bought a whole bunch of stations, started putting right-wingers on and built this thing up. But it's taken them a lot of time to get there. I mean, you know, their star, I think, is probably Michael Medved. But, yeah, I agree with you. I wish the folks at Air America a whole world of luck, because if they're successful, just like Russia's success, it'll open the door to a lot of the rest of us in much larger ways. And if they fail, a lot of people are going to go, yep, I told you so. Those liberals, they don't know. You know, and which is just a terrible myth. But anyway, Elaine in Humboldt County's on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Elaine, you're live with Tom and Cenk.
Well, I just wanted to bring up something I heard last night on KGO San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And the government is very, very quietly calling up anyone that has had any connection in the past with military, and regardless of age, and apparently going to send them to Iraq. And I thought this was just dastardly. And I think the right wing should be called the wrong wing.
Yeah. Or I prefer to call them the Reich wing. But
well, that too.
Yeah, okay.
We have a fascist government in the making, apparently.
Yeah, it's beyond in the making, Elaine. I mean, if the classic definition of fascism is the merging of corporate and state interests, which is how Mussolini defined it and how the dictionary defines it, it really started with Ronald Reagan. It picked up speed with Bill Clinton, and it is full bore boogie going on right now. Your thoughts on that, Cenk?
You see, here's the thing. I think it'd be great if they did the draft, because for the first time, people would say, what? My children?
Yeah, I agree.
No, I'm not going to send my children to this senseless war. It would kind of wake up people to how incredibly senseless it is. And that's a good way to judge whether you think this war makes sense or not. Would you send your son or daughter to fight in it? And for me, the answer is incredibly obvious. Hell no.
Yeah, I got to be thinking if the Bush twins were in the Army, you know, we would not be in Iraq. You know, we're changed.
Well, I mean, of course, they wouldn't be in the Army anyway. They'd find a way to get out of it like their pop did. But
yeah. Yeah, but still, that's the thing. I think, frankly, it was the draft that led to the meltdown of the Vietnam War. I mean, because you know you had just average people going over there and kids of the middle class, in fact, and their parents are politically active. They show up, they vote, they get active, and now we've got a military. You know, Jefferson wrote. He said, "I hope to see the day," because he was opposed to our having an army at all. He wanted us to have a national militia, sort of like Switzerland does, where everyone has a gun, and you know, if we're invaded, you ring the bell and you grab your gun, and boom, everybody's in the army. But the rest of the time, there is no army. And that's, you know, that the remnant of that, of course, of that argument between him and Adams is the Second Amendment. And Jefferson said, you know, I hope to live to see the day when there will be no more need for paupers to enlist in the military as their last option, as their last choice. We got Dave in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I've been trying to send you an email. I don't know if you've had a chance to take a peek at any of them, but I believe that no administration as criminal as the one we have now could begin to remain in power and function without having some degree of control over the entire media. The reality as I see it, to be labeled a conspiracy theorist, is that this administration orchestrated its 9/11. They ordered the military to stand down while they pulled it off. They flew their conspirators out of the country. We have a media that is standing by saying, I don't want to believe this is true. And I think at some level, they're all aware of it. They used that as an excuse to inflict the Patriot Act 1 and 2 on us, and we sit back and let that happen to us?
Yeah, they did. Adolf Hitler did the same thing with the Enabling Acts. 3.5 months after the Reichstagsgebouw was burned, he passed laws saying that the police could intercept mail, listen on phone conversations, arrest people without due process. And in fact, there was a 4-year sunset provision on it, just like on the Patriot Act.
Tom, I got to disagree with something the caller said.
Sure.
I'm not one that's big on the conspiracy theories. I don't think the U.S. government did 9/11. I don't want to get into that at all.
And neither do I.
Did they use it to their advantage? Did they use it, once that opportunity was presented to them?
Did they ever? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. They did. But I don't think they were behind it.
Yeah, yeah. I am inclined to agree with you that this was an enormous opportunity. It wouldn't surprise me to learn that they knew something was up and they did a little less than they could have, thinking that it might somehow work to their advantage. But I doubt that they expected anything as spectacular as this. I don't think even Osama bin Laden expected that those buildings would fall.
I think pre-9/11, the Bush administration was simply incompetent and negligent. I don't think it was part of a master plan to let the guard down. I just think they had no idea what they were doing. They were stuck in a time warp, and they thought that this was still the 1980s, and we had to build missile defense.
Yeah, and they were doing it. We're talking
the Cold War.
Yep.
It's just a senseless priorities that they had before 9/11.
Cenk Uygur is one of the Young Turks. In fact, I'll be on your show tonight, right?
Absolutely.
On Sirius
Left 143,
great.
6 to 9 p.m. Tom's going to be on the show today. You should check
great.
It out.
YoungTurk.com. Cenk, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
Okay, see you tonight.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a 1-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
He loves it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here, walking the line in Liberal Talk Radio. I've been calling it uncommon sense from the radical middle. But what the heck? Progressive, liberal, whatever you want to call it. Here I am. Here we are. And here you are. It has been calculated that if everyone in the United States did not purchase a drop of gasoline for one day and all at the same time, the oil companies would choke on their stockpiles. Have you gotten one of these emails? I've gotten like 15 of these things. Today is National Buy No Gas Day. I want to talk about that and what that means. Because, you know, what it means that we're building a civilization based on oil and what Bush is up to right now with the strategic reserves. I'm telling you, there's an October surprise coming and it should be obvious to everybody. Let's take a couple calls first, though, before we do that. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Donna in Chicago is on the line. Hey, Donna, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. I just have a brief comment. You know, your guest was talking about the extremes of Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage, but here in Chicago the other day on a just a morning drive time program, and it was a mainstream program, the host, it was a man and a woman, and they were joking about the prison torture and making, you know, sexual innuendo jokes and the like. And I guess I just wanted to point out that, you know, it's there is no middle
this
anymore
is,
in a lot, on a lot
pervasive.
Of radio stations. It's not mainstream. They are very much to the right. And
yeah.
I will take your comments off the air.
Okay. Yeah, Donna, thanks. I you know, you're spot on right that there has been such a polarization in the United States. And I lay it at the feet of the great divider, George W. Bush. You're with us or against us. You're good or you're evil. The world is black and white. Those folks are evil. If they are evil, they are less than human. They're going to burn in hell. They're doomed anyway. Blah, 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 blah. And it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. And then you've got, you know, the juvenile, the, you know, anybody who's ever been in war. I've not been in war carrying a weapon, but I have been in war zones. I was in several of them, actually, and I have seen people die, and as a result, both of famine and of war, of gunshot wounds. And anybody who has ever seen that would not make the kind of jokes that these guys are making. It's just it's a whole different thing. 1-866-889-8894. Kate in Arcata, California, is on the line. Hey, Kate, what's up?
Hi, Tom. This is my second time calling you, and I never called ever radio stations before, so this is great to be able to feel like moved to do it and that I'm really participating.
Well, thank
what
you.
I wanted to let you know was, first of all, based on, given what you just said about polarization, Bill Moyers, I heard a speech of his recently, and he said there's always been polarization, and I'm sure you're, you're really aware of that, too, and it's not something we should let paralyze us.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's never been promoted in such a massive way. I mean, even
I totally agree. I mean, yes.
Even the Madison Jefferson fights that got very dirty, you know, and the Tyler Tippecanoe and Tyler. I mean, there are a lot of
Civil War.
Yeah, yeah, that was a big one, wasn't it?
I think we should just realize it's always there, but do our best to keep moving forward regardless. But the reason I called, are you still there?
I am.
Oh, good. Okay.
We got a little less than a minute.
To tell you that the woman that called from Eureka about listening to KGO and hearing something about a military call-up quietly happening, it was on Ray Taliaferro last night on KGO. I happened to hear it, too. And it's not about a draft. He was saying that they're quietly calling up people from 18 to 60, calling them back into service if they've ever been into the military.
Yeah, that's the fine print in your discharge papers.
Yes, and that's actually happening. Now, that is scarier than a draft. But anyway, yeah. I just wanted to see if maybe someone can find that out, if that really is happening.
I'll look into it. I'll look
great.
Into
thanks,
that.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks so much for your show.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot, Kate. Thanks for calling. It's great to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 1-866-889-8894. What's up with the petroleum reserve? Why is George Bush, why is this thing at 95% of capacity and George Bush is still filling it with oil, keeping oil prices high until maybe October? We'll talk about that after the break, after we hear from one more caller. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Most Americans now know that when they call up their credit card company or computer helpline, chances are they'll be talking to a young worker in India. He'll be part of a growing army of Indians who work through the middle of their night to cater to American hours. Some in India deride them as cyber coolies, but most Indian call center workers say their jobs have brought them new opportunities, not to mention unheard-of salaries. Javed Akhtar works at an American call center in New Delhi with clients like American Express and Yahoo.
You get paid a hell of a lot. Like, you get paid the kind of money you won't get in any other industry. You can do whatever you want. You can buy a house, you can buy a car, you know, you can shop throughout the day on your weekends. You get so much experience, you get so much exposure here that you can easily get a job anywhere else.
This mall on the outskirts of New Delhi is filled with multinational chains and was basically built for call center workers. Manoj Sakia has come here to catch a film on his day off from his call center job. But he says working in a call center is not all it's made out to be.
Working in an actual is very stressful. For 21 years, I'm sleeping in the night and working or doing my things in the day. And fully changing your biological cycle. It's really difficult on your health.
Another complaint of call center workers is that they have to learn to speak in American or British accents to prevent customers from detecting that they're in India. Rebecca, who wants to be known by her adopted American name, is a voice trainer for call center workers.
My main job is to first of all recruit individuals, and then I take them for training, wherein I teach them communication skills and American culture, also a little bit about how to clear their voice, wherein they don't have a very regional accent, they have a very neutral accent.
Many workers find the accent stress and the topsy-turvy hours too much to bear. The turnover in American call centers is about 6 months. Nevertheless, they're not going away anytime soon. There will always be a new crop of young, educated, middle-class recruits. The outsourcing economy only highlights the vast divide between India's rich and poor. Some 400 million live on less than a dollar a day in India, points out author Kalpana Sharma.
See, the middle class certainly feels good, and for them, India is shining. But the rest of India, 800 million at least of them, for them, India is not shining. And I would say for at least 400 million, it's like despair, because, you know, they're being literally forgotten. It is going to catch up on India.
Thanks to Miranda Kennedy in New Delhi, reporting for the Workers' Independent News Service. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
There's a war and a plague, smoke and disaster, lions in the Colosseum, screams over laughter, motherless children, a witness and a Bible, a liberator had no chance for our survival.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Is would it make any difference at all if everybody in America didn't buy any gas today? Well, the short answer is no. You know, the oil companies are going to choke on their gasoline inventory if everybody doesn't buy gas today. I remember when this happened a couple years ago, too, and it was, you know, everybody was saying, hey, we got to do this. No, I'm sorry. It ain't, you know, it's not going to make any difference. We'll get into that in some more detail and why and what's going on with that. Let's first take a call, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roberta in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Roberta, how are you today?
Good morning, Tom. I wanted to preface my statements with, again, my acknowledgement and respect for you as a brother, faux brother in the quest for Thomas Jefferson. But I want to commend the fellow from Eureka, was it Dave, who talked about the conspiracy with 9/11. I really, you know, we all have our opinions about it, but it doesn't track much with the knowledge of history. Anyone who has connected the dots or read between the lines on the historical genocide of all true believers in Latin America and in the East, and now in the sons of Ishmael are under the gun and the torture rack. I think anyone who does not see that thread of commonality maybe should look down there and see if he's missing something.
Yeah, you know, my take on this, Roberta, is that it's probably, in terms of the conspiracy, that it's probably similar to what is alleged about Roosevelt, which was that when Roosevelt wanted us to get into World War II, and the Republicans were fighting him tooth and nail on this thing. I mean, absolutely, it was incredibly bitter. Rex Stout wrote a whole book called The Illustrious Dunderheads, which is nothing but quotes from Republicans from the House and Senate floor. And he couldn't get it through, and he couldn't get the American people behind it. And so he positioned warships in the Straits of Malacca, there between Singapore and Malaysia, or between Malaysia and Borneo, rather, which was where the oil that fed Japan came in from the Middle East and from India, knowing that this would cut off the oil to Japan and knowing that Japan would have to retaliate. Now, most folks assume that he figured that the form of retaliation would be that they would attack the fleet out there. I mean, I think there's a pretty broad consensus among historians that he really didn't expect that they would attack Pearl Harbor. But the fact of the matter is that he was trying to provoke a provocation that would justify our getting into the war. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if, when history is all said and done and all the evidence is out, and of course you and I both know that probably is never going to happen, but nonetheless, if it were, that these guys, I mean, it wasn't like they didn't have warning. I mean, this stuff was in the New York Times for years. It was like, you know, Osama bin Laden sent them a letter a couple of years in advance. So it wasn't like they didn't have warning and the presidential daily briefing and all that stuff. But at the level of, yeah, we know something's going to happen. In fact, we even probably know it's going to happen in New York and Washington, D.C. I mean, the presidential daily briefing talked about them scouting out buildings in New York and Washington. George Bush stayed out of those cities for, you know, took the longest presidential vacation in history. I figured that they knew something was going to happen. But to get into the whole idea that they were in charge of it or behind it, I don't know. Roberta, you seem to have dropped. The line is no longer lit up, so... just to let you know, in the event that you're a subscriber to Conspiracy Theories, I did not hang up on you. So I don't know what happened to Roberta there. Anyhow, thank you for calling, Roberta. It's always nice to hear from you. Here's the thing with the gasoline. It has been calculated that if everyone in the United States did not purchase a drop of gasoline for one day, and all at the same time, the oil companies would choke on their stockpiles. You get this email, it's gone all over the place, and today is the day. At the same time, it would hit the entire industry with a net loss of over $4.6 billion, which affects the bottom line of the oil company. Now, see, first of all, not buying gas is irrelevant. What you'd have to do is not drive, because if you don't buy the gas today, you got to buy it tomorrow. So, you know, that's number one. So, you know, this thing is a joke. But the bigger joke, or the bigger disaster, really, the bigger tragedy, is that building a civilization on liquefied fossils, which is literally what oil is. You put a drop of oil on your hand and look at it, you are looking at, you know, metaphorically, you're looking at liquid dinosaur bones. The reality is, actually, the dinosaurs were around from a period of about 130 to 90 million years ago, whereas the Carboniferous period, when most of the oil was created, was 300 to 400 million years ago. I mean, you know, 200 to 300 million years older than the dinosaurs, actually, is that fossil that you drop onto your hand if you take a look at a drop of gasoline. And to think that you can build an entire civilization on dinosaur bones or the metaphorical equivalent, and that it'll last forever, is, to be charitable, insane. Just plain old, flat out, insane. As the Wall Street Journal points out today in a cover story, front page story, As fresh prospects dry up, petroleum industry strikes deals. And basically what they're saying is that the gas, the oil industry, because they're not finding any more oil. Well, in fact, I'll give you a couple of quotes from this is by Bhushan Bhabri. He says, increasingly the world's major oil companies operate like investment banks. Through most of the 20th century, the major petroleum countries focused on exploring for oil and natural gas, but the oil of elephant strikes is over. There has been just one great find in the last 30 years, the 1999 discovery in Kazakhstan, a field off Kazagan, a field off Kazakhstan in the Caspian Sea. Today, the oil fields in the Western oil majors, traditional strongholds, Alaska, the North Sea, Texas, are in decline. Most of the world's untapped reserves are in the hands of state-owned oil companies in the Middle East. The relative dry spell has left the majors, Exxon, Mobil Corp, BP, Royal Dutch Shell Group, France's Total SA, and Chevron Texaco Corp, under intense pressure to replace the reserves they use. How are they doing this? They're buying up other oil companies. They're just, you know, they're going into arbitrage. And they point out that this poses a problem. It does little or nothing to increase the world's overall petroleum stockpile. And then here's the kicker. Again, quoting from the front page of today's Wall Street Journal, oil consumption is outpacing the industry's discovery of new reserves. At current rates of production, there are 40.6 years of consumption covered by proven oil reserves in the ground in 2002. That was down from 44.7 years in 1989. So, you know, we've got this problem. So, yes, the price of gas is going to go up. And actually, the price of gas right now is not at a historic high. It has been higher in the past than it is right now, adjusted for inflation. And we have the cheapest gas in the world. Europe, Japan, you know, most of the rest of the industrialized world, largely as a consequence of gas tax intended to discourage consumption, pays anywhere from $4 to $6 a gallon for gasoline. We pay about $2 a gallon. But isn't it interesting that the strategic reserve, we've got this strategic reserve. We're, you know, put this into context. Saudi Arabia now is talking about, you know, Prince Bandar had told George Bush that before the election, in the month or two before the election, you know, let the Democrats yell and scream about the price of oil all through the summer, and then in the fall, drop the price of oil by increasing Saudi oil production in the summer, because it takes a while to work its way through the pipelines, the refineries and whatnot. And then the price of oil will drop in the fall. And George Bush, rips another campaign thing away from the Democrat, another great October surprise, and it'll boost the economy, and it'll lower shipping costs, and it'll help. You know, there is this huge ripple effect, because so much of our economy is based on oil. Well, Bandar kept his promise to drive down oil prices, not hugely, but significantly. However, number one, there's not an absolute consensus. Venezuela is one of the larger members of OPEC, and they believe that they have evidence that the United States government, the Bush administration, is trying to destabilize their government And they're not happy about that. Mexico has been feeling dissed. They produce a lot of our oil. And the war in the Middle East is making 1 million barrels, and it's like at about 560 right now, and he's still pumping gas into it, or oil into it. And everybody's saying, and a lot of the Democrats right now are saying, hey, George, stop filling the reserve, and the price of oil will go down, because you're competing with, you know, in the market for crude oil. The government is buying up so much of the crude oil that's being brought into the United States. What they don't get is this is just brilliant campaign strategy. This is Karl Rove at his best. Buy up the oil that's being imported into the United States. There's a limit to how much can get in. I mean, there's only so many oil tankers. There's only so many ports that you can bring it through. U.S. domestic production has a certain capacity. And, you know, so, yes, oil is fungible. That is to say, you know, it diminishes over here and it pops up over here. You know, then supplies will vary around the world. But the reality is that the ability of the United States to bring more oil into the United States rapidly and get it into the stream, not all that great. We're pretty much maxed out right now at what we can bring in. So if the federal government goes in and competes against ExxonMobil and Shell and BP and all the refiners for the crude oil so that we can pump oil into the strategic reserve, what happens? The price goes up. The price of crude oil goes up. The price of gasoline goes up. Who takes the blame? The oil companies. See, this is a brilliant political stroke. No downside at all for George W. Bush. He's not taking... I mean, there's a few Democrats who are trying to out him. You know, you got Joe Biden and these guys running around going, you know, we know what he's up to. Here's what's going on. The average American is clueless. Absolutely clueless. Instead, what they're doing is they're sending out these emails like this one that I just read to you that are circling the globe over and over and over again saying, just don't buy gas for a day. That'll teach them. Yeah, right. It'll teach them that you're going to have to buy gas more gas tomorrow. So George is filling the reserve and topping that thing off, driving up the price of oil in the United States. And then guess what's going to happen in September? A couple months down the road, you know, a couple more months, he could probably fill it all the way up to the top. And then he'll say, you know, you Democrats, you guys were right. Just like he did with Iraq, you know. With Iraq, he said, no, we're going to go it alone. We don't need the United Nations. You know, they look at how they cut and run after their headquarters got blown up. You know, we never want an international. And all of a sudden, he's, Mr. Brahimi, would you please come in and help us set up elections? And, you know, after the Democrats had been saying for 2 years or for a year, hey, you need to internationalize this. And Bush had been giving them all this grief. Then he does it. And then he says, what a brilliant idea I had. And the Democrats are standing there, you know, holding empty air in their hands going, but it was our idea. But, of course, you know, Fox News isn't going to tell you that. And CBS, NBC, ABC are not going to tell you that. And by and large, even CNN is not going to tell you that. But, you know, it's obvious to anybody who's been paying attention. So, anyhow, this fall, when the strategic reserve starts getting drawn down, when George says, okay, time for a little campaign October surprise, a little October surprise here. Let's get the price of oil down below $2 a gallon. He starts emptying the strategic reserve into the U.S. market. The oil companies are able to, you know, the price of oil crashes domestically. The oil companies refine gasoline. You get more gasoline out there. Now, when the prices went up, of course, who took the flak? The oil companies. When the prices go down, who's going to get the credit? It's going to be George W. Bush. He's going to make sure that he gets the credit. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, this kind of falls into the category of Hartman's weird predictions that may or may not come true. We will see, sort of like my suggestion that Dick Cheney is going to suddenly claim that he has health problems, that his heart isn't quite as good as he thought it was, or it's time for his pacemaker to be transplanted or replaced or something. And therefore, Rudy Giuliani needs to be the vice presidential candidate. And what a coincidence they're going to nominate him in Florida. So we'll see what happens. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Armin in Florida. Hey, what are your thoughts on this, Armin?
There's a real interesting story on
Armin? I think you must be on a cell phone or something because you have just vanished. I've lost you. So, and it didn't drop off that time like it did with Roberta. I don't think that it is John Ashcroft on our telephone lines, but you might try giving us a call back. So anyhow, we'll see what happens come September, October. Yeah, these are the kind of things that I just hate to say I told you so. But wake up your friends. Tell people about it. Maybe that'll help neutralize it when it happens. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Hotter summers could bring more wildfires to the California landscape. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Last summer, a wave of wildfires swept across North America. Fires from California to Florida charred millions of acres of land. Scientists are now wondering if there will be even more intense fires in the future as the Earth's climate continues to change. Robert Wilkinson is the coordinator for the California Regional Climate Assessment. It's part of a nationwide effort to determine how climate change will affect parts of the United States. Wilkinson sees three different scenarios for California. He says it could be wetter and warmer. That could lead to more plant growth that would produce more fuel for fire. Or it could be drier and warmer. That makes it easier for plants to burn. Finally, the conditions could go back and forth. Wilkinson says that would be the worst-case scenario. It would produce lots of fuel, followed by conditions that are ideal for fire.
And I think the question about which one might we predict, let's assume that we're not certain, so we better prepare for all three futures in ways that are as robust and resilient as we can make them.
Wilkinson says some ecosystems that naturally burn on a regular basis now have homes planted amidst the combustible vegetation.
the ecosystems, those forest and chaparral systems, normally burn on some period of 10, 20, 30 years. It's much more difficult to deal with fire when there are a bunch of houses now planted in amongst the trees or chaparral.
Wilkinson says finding water to fight these fires will be a challenge. California's water resources are already under strain by the demands of agriculture and a growing population. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. And other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. This'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life.
Oh, yes. And there always is a bright side. You look hard enough. Sometimes you gotta look really hard. But it is a beautiful day here in the People's Republic of Vermont. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 4 minutes before the hour. And Harry in Grand Rapids, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Harry, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I would like to emphasize to the American people out there that this is probably going to be the most important election I've ever voted in.
Amen.
Because look what this administration has done in just a short 3.5 years. Can you picture what the outcome would be if we had him for another four?
Yeah, and plus if he was able to claim a mandate. I mean, if he was to be able to say, hey, I want an election fair and square this time so the people really, you know, are behind me. And I mean,
right.
You know, it's just, whew, yeah. Yeah,
oh,
and
boy.
It's not just the presidential election, Harry. It's even more important is Congress.
Yeah, you might remind people that talking about swinging to fascism, there was a book written just before the war or just the beginning of the war. I think Sinclair Lewis or Upton Sinclair wrote it.
It was Sinclair Lewis, and it was called It Can't Happen Here. It's brilliant.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for calling here.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you're welcome. It can't happen here. In fact, for a year, I tried to contact the estate of Sinclair Lewis because I wanted to rewrite that in a modern form. It is a fiction book about an average family, and a guy gets elected as president of the United States who wears a coonskin cap, and his campaign slogan is Family Values. This book was written in 1934. And the book ends with the President of the United States marching the dissidents, the communists, the Jews, and the other minority groups off into concentration camps. It is absolutely spooky. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Well, on my way home on the airport the other day, I was reading Unequal Protection and sitting next to this about 70-year-old man and struck up a conversation. He used to sell to Walmart from the very beginning. And I was just talking about America in general and what's going on. Wasn't he outraged that the Michigan Republican head said that all we needed are $1.30 an hour wages like Mexico and we'd have manufacturing back? He didn't react to any of that. It was like he was blind, and he thought Walmart was great. Of course, they put him out of business because he sold blades to cut meat in their shops and Walmarts, and Walmart started buying meat already cut.
Yeah, it's amazing. Some folks just don't get it. They just don't get it.
They don't get it.
Glenn, thanks for the call, and keep spreading the good word, you know, keep passing it along. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, The Vast Radical Metal Conspiracy.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Fire season is just kicking off in the western United States, but will there be enough people available to fight the flames when they come? Several members of Congress are protesting to Agriculture Secretary Ann Veneman that the U.S. Forest Service is being shortchanged on funds to fight fires this year. At present funding levels, the Forest Service will only be able to hire about two-thirds of the temporary firefighting help used last year. That translates to some 3,000 fewer firefighters on the lines this summer.
This week, the world's largest earth-moving equipment company, Caterpillar, declared victory when a federal judge struck down an Illinois law banning the use of strike replacement workers. The United Auto Workers Union represents more than 8,000 Caterpillar employees in four states who've been working without a contract since rejecting a proposed six-year deal last month, billed as the company's final offer. In 1995, 13,300 UAW members participated in a bitter 17-month-long strike, which ended largely in defeat for the union after Caterpillar was able to bring in replacement workers.
We're building prosperity for this country. It's a unique moment in our history, and you're living through it.
Those words were spoken by George W. Bush at an appearance at the Timken Company in Canton, Ohio last April. The ball-bearing manufacturer happens to be the largest employer in Canton, and its founder is a big supporter of the Republican Party. So it seemed like a good place for Bush to tout his multi-billion dollar tax cut package, which he claimed at the time would result in millions of new jobs.
And that's what the whole purpose of the package is. To create the conditions for job growth so people can find work.
What a difference a year makes. Timken just announced it's closing all three factories in Canton, putting more than 1,300 out of work.
The offshoring of U.S. jobs is happening at a faster rate than previously thought, according to a new study by technology analysis firm Forrester Research. In 2002, the firm estimated fewer than 600,000 U.S. service jobs will be lost by 2005. It's since increased that estimate by 40% to 830,000 jobs moved overseas.
Here's today's Daubab Report. The U.S. Trade Adjustment Assistance Act is supposed to provide a safety net of sorts to those who lose their jobs to global competition, like the factory workers who get laid off when a company moves production to Mexico or China. But the Labor Research Association notes that of all the manufacturing jobs lost in the United States in the name of free trade last year, less than 40% received benefits under the Trade Adjustment Assistance Act. President Bush's 2005 budget proposes net cuts to TAA program-related funding.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
I have been to the cross, and I have felt the passion. Not Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion, where viewers get to see a Jesus character beaten to a bloody pulp and then graphically crucified on a cross. No, there's nothing at all holy or redeeming about the cross I have witnessed. It's a political cross. marking the spot in Austin, Texas, where the GOP's diabolical hatchet man, Tom DeLay, beat our state's representative democracy to a pulp. This simple wooden cross, nailed to a telephone pole, is 4 feet high, painted white, and hand-lettered. The crosspiece says, Democracy. The centerpiece says, R.I.P., killed by Tom DeLay on this spot. Tom, of course, is the nutball Republican majority leader of the U.S. House, who stormed into the Texas state capitol last year and used the GOP's total control of state government to ram through a grossly partisan, contorted piece of raw gerrymandering that autocratically redraws our state's congressional districts and steals half a dozen seats from the Democrats. A theft that will alter the balance of power in Washington. Austin has long had its own coherent congressional district, logical for a state capital and a community of shared interests. DeLay's power grab, however, fractures our city into three shards of incoherent districts that are dominated by populations far from our borders. Stand in central Austin at 38th and Ronson Streets, where the telephone pole cross was erected, and you are at the epicenter of the fracture. Step in one direction and you're in a district controlled by San Antonio's Republican suburbs. Step in another direction and you're in a district running 300 miles away to the Rio Grande Valley. Step again and you're in a district controlled by Houston's Republican suburbs. This is Jim Hightower saying, a majority of Austinites now have congressional districts without representation. There once was a revolution over that anti-democratic principle.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to Viagra.com/card. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to Viagra.com/card today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. Tom Hartman here with you, live coast to coast, border to border. Well, do you make more than $309,000 a year? If so, you'll be very happy. The Republican-controlled House of Representatives has just put out a bill this week offering an increase in child tax deductions, you know, the tax credit you get for having kids, for families who make as much as $309,000 a year. However, if you make $10,750 a year or less, you get nothing. That's as in squat. That's as in forget it, Charlie. But if you make $309,000 a year, the Republicans have got a gift for you in this new tax bill. Isn't this extraordinary? It's the Urban Institute, Brookings Institution Tax Policy Center said this is the most egregious part of a House tax-cutting spree that altogether would add more than $500 billion to the deficit over the next 10 years. Now, that's on top of the $500 billion a year we're running up on right now, and that's on top of the money. It is not just interesting times that we live in, my friends. It is dangerous times. Dangerous times. And the danger is coming as much from within, with the insanity of these folks who are trying to absolutely dismantle a democratic government of, by, and for the people and replace it with what they call the conservative agenda, a government of, by, and for transnational corporations and the extremely wealthy. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you would like to offer your thoughts, opinions, suggestions, ideas, arguments today. Here's Brad in New York City is on the line. Hey, Brad, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Hey, it's Brad who does our music. I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. I feel compelled to say that I don't make $309,000 a year.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Brad.
Yeah. I was calling because I was wondering if you'd seen any of the 9/11 Commission questioning of Rudy Giuliani this morning.
No, I didn't. I missed it.
I missed the beginning of it, but I caught the probably the last half. Most of it was taken up with their effusive praise of America's mayor.
Yeah, especially the Republicans. I mean, keep in mind, this guy's going to be our next vice president if Bush gets not reelected.
I didn't hear any Democrats criticizing him either.
Yeah.
What I thought was very interesting, though, was this was definitely a New York crowd in the background because there were some shout-outs. A lot of, like, if there was any kind of pausing or they're going from one questioner to another, I heard people shouting out, what about the radios? They wanted to know about the problems with the radios that the firemen were trying to use in the World Trade Center, and those questions weren't being asked. We had people hollering out, give me 1 minute rebuttal. Let me ask three questions. You know, 300 of our firemen died. Mm. It was rowdy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was very, and one guy got let out at the end, and he kept shouting that this administration funded Al-Qaeda. And he kept saying it over and over again as the cops dragged him out.
Yeah, well, we did. To fight the Russians in Afghanistan, we helped create and fund Al-Qaeda. Yeah, absolutely.
It was really a rowdy crowd. Now, I don't know. I think Bloomberg's going to be there maybe tomorrow, our current mayor.
Yeah. Any high points in it, Brad? Were there any, you know, ahas or revelations, or was it mostly just a love fest?
I thought it was mostly a love fest. And, it was interesting hearing Giuliani talking about the Office of Emergency Management and how the different organizations, the police and firemen, work together. And he brought up one thing that was kind of funny, interesting. He said, in a major crisis, these guys work together really well.
Totally.
You get someone that needs to be dragged out of a car that got in an accident, and then they're going to fight over, you know, the police are going to try to get there first, the firemen are going to try to get there first, because each one thinks they can do a better job.
Yeah.
But he said 9/11 or some other catastrophe, they really, you know, set the ego aside and work together really well. And he just made that a blanket statement. New Yorkers handle major crises very well.
You think that's true? I mean, you live there.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing.
That's been my
sense. The neighborhood I live in lost a lot of firemen.
Yeah,
they're just a lot of the blue collar infrastructure of the city comes from where I live, way out in Brooklyn, and it was a pretty trying times.
Yeah.
Flags everywhere, let me tell you.
Yeah, I can imagine. Brad, thanks for calling and sharing that with us.
Okay.
Always great to hear from you, and thanks for keeping sending us this great music,
sure.
Brad in New York City. It's 12 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Now let's see. The cons have this thing about gay marriage. Of course, yesterday was the big hoop-de-doop in Massachusetts, where gay marriage got decriminalized, I guess it would be legalized, you know, fully legalized. And you know, a lot of gay couples got married, and so you've got, Falwell and the other foam-at-the-mouthers going on TV. Actually, I can't say specifically Falwell, because I didn't see him, but you know what I'm talking about. That ilk going on there. Repeating Santorum stuff. I mean, well, Santorum was, you know, well, this is going to legalize man on dog. I kind of doubt that. I mean, you know, I think there was a case of an heiress in New York City some time back who had tried to leave her fortune to her dog or her cats or something, you know, but it wasn't legalizing marriage. But then the other argument that they make is that, why stop at two men or two women? You know, we started out with a man and a woman. Why stop at two? Why not legalize three or four? Why not, in other words, why not legalize polygamy? And Ira Chernus wrote a great piece on Common Dreams that was published on Monday. Group marriage, a legal right? And, you know, it really is interesting if you take the stand of these literalists who say, you know, we need to take the Bible literally and we need to do what the Bible says, and the Bible talks about marriage. Well, how many wives did Solomon have? King Solomon. Over 700, as I recall. I mean, it's been a few years since I read it, but that's my recollection. I realize that in the New Testament, Paul said that to be a bishop of a church, or an official in the church, a man should be of good moral character and ideally only have one wife. But it was not mandated. In Muslim Arab culture, the limit is four. You can have up to four wives legally. In Saudi Arabia and Iraq and Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates, most of these countries. Among the Palestinians, we have some friends in Israel started a community for abused kids there. It's now one of the largest in the country. And Louise and I used to go over and hang out and help them out. And for a while, when they were first starting out, they rented an apartment that was the top half of a house. And the downstairs of the house was this old patriarch who he was in his 60s. And he had his wife number one, who was in her 60s, who kind of ruled the roost. And then there was wife number two, who was in her 40s, I'd guess. And one of her kids still lived with them, who was like in his 20s. And then there was wife number three, who was in her 30s. And then there was wife number four, who looked to be about maybe 16 years old, and she was pregnant. And the place was full of kids. There were half a dozen kids from the various wives. And we ate several meals with them. We spent some time with them. And it seemed to me like a very happy family. Now, you know, I may be completely wrong because, you know, I've seen, back when we ran a community for abused kids in New Hampshire, I have seen extremely dysfunctional, extremely destructive families that can put on a good face. But anyhow, should group marriage be a legal right? Should that be the next thing decriminalized? Are the Mormons right? I mean, the real Mormons. You know, the Mormons now who have disavowed polygamy are not the lineal descendants of Joseph Smith's number two guy, or number one guy, what was his name, who led them across Utah, Brigham Young. The actual direct followers of Brigham Young are still practicing polygamy out there in Utah. And, I don't know. I know the arguments. It's exploitative of women. And I agree. However, at what point do you say this is society's business, and at what point do you say this is the individual's business, assuming that people aren't being sold into marriage or forced into marriage? So I thought it was an interesting question to raise. Just wanted to raise it. Aaron Chernus, he says, monogamy is no more part of human nature than heterosexuality or racial segregation. It's all a matter of social learning. And he says, groups raised by three or more may be happier and healthier than those raised just by two. These kids will certainly grow up with better adult-to-child ratio. They'll be more likely to find an adult with the time to give them the attention and support they need, and the financial support pool will be bigger, too. Could the cons be right? And if so, might that be a bad thing? My take on it personally is that people should have the legal right to do whatever they want. If they want to enter into a contract, a marriage contract with more than one person, I think that should be legal. For the Mormons, for example. And if people are being abused in situations, then society has an obligation to step in. I see those as two separate things. 1-866-889-8894. What are your thoughts on this? Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, what happened?
Do I have to stay on topic?
No, you don't. What's up?
Well, I can real quickly. First off, I could never convince my wife to allow me to marry five additional beautiful women that are millionaires.
Would you be willing to let her marry a second husband?
A millionaire?
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. So what's up?
Why are you laughing? What's funny about that?
It makes eminent sense, actually.
Tom! What if the Pope's listening?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not with the Pope on everything. In fact, I'm not with the Pope on a lot of things. But what's up? What's the call about here, Armin? We got about a minute to go.
Well, I don't know if the people out there are aware the reason why the groping oil party, that's what I call the GOP now, the groping oil party,
mm-hmm.
why they're becoming so liberal on open borders and illegals and everything else, is it's very obvious to me right now, at this very point in time, in my opinion, that the Bush crime family has a little covert secret deal with Vicente Fox and the ruling elite of Mexico, which, you know, not unlike the ruling elite of the United States that want to turn the United States into a Mexico economy.
And the ruling elites of Nigeria and a lot of other countries. I mean, the only country that we're not in bed with is Venezuela, and that's why we're trying to overthrow them.
Well, that's obvious, too, but we're getting the oil through the back door now from Mexico. I'm totally convinced.
Yeah.
That keeping this balloon floating while they're trying to barbarically take over the Mideast.
Yep, I agree, at least until the elections. 1-866-889-8894. Thanks, Armin. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, it's a strange old game to learn slow. One step forward and it's back to go. You're standing on the throttle, you're standing on the brake. In the groove till you make a mistake.
And that's George Bush coming up. He's going to be the bug. Yes, indeed. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 25 minutes past the hour. Sometimes you're the windshield. Sometimes you're the bug. Yeah. Actually, not just George. We have to keep in mind, it's not just about getting Bush out of office. It's about getting the cons out of office, both the Democrats and the Republicans, who have wedded themselves to this unholy religion that they call conservatism, that Dwight Eisenhower and Barry Goldwater would be revolted by. We need to return to democratic principles in America. Very simple, very straightforward. 25 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Jonathan in Palm Desert. Is that California, Jonathan?
Yes, it is.
Hey, and how are you listening to the show? And how are you listening to the show?
I'm listening to it on Radio Power.
Oh, great. I didn't think we had a radio station there. So we have radiopower.org, our great internet streaming station, and wonderful folks, and let me encourage you to make a contribution.
Please give my donation.
Great. Good on you. What's up, Jonathan?
Well, just an interesting thought about the gay marriage issue, especially with the comments of people like Rick Santorum and Jerry Falwell and all these people who are equating homosexuality with all these other things like
bestiality,
all that sort of stuff. And I wonder if it has to do with the fundamental difference in the way religious morality and, dare I say, liberal morality look at things. If religious folks see sexuality as being mandated by God and that certain acts are illegal or rather immoral, there's really not much differentiation between different acts, is there? I mean,
the Bible's pretty explicit about some of these things. For example, any man who spills his seed upon the ground, in other words, masturbates, is to be stoned, and not with pot. It's okay to have a wife. It's okay to have a concubine. If a man wants to divorce his wife, he takes her shoes to the village gate and leaves them there. That's how he divorces her. If you want to get biblical, there's really in the entire Bible, there's almost nothing that resembles the current contemporary modern Western society model of monogamy. There isn't.
Yes, I agree completely.
It's just not there.
But just from a sort of fire and brimstone perspective, a sin is a sin and you go to hell for it. So is there really I'm just curious. I don't think folks like Jerry Falwell and Rick Santorum feel that there's a difference if homosexuality
That's the artificial
thing. Difference between rape and homosexuality as far as being a sin goes, because they're both against what God says.
Yeah, well, that's where they're trying to paint something which I think increasingly society, regardless of what the Bible says about it, I think that the society is increasingly coming to the conclusion that most of us came to a long time ago, that there are some people who are simply born gay, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that, or it's just that's life, and they should have full rights just like everybody else.
Right.
And I was not being facetious.
Free will starts to come into things.
Yeah, maybe for some people it's a choice, but my experience has been, I believe most gay people are actually born that way. And beyond that, I think that,
the government has no business legislating morality. The government has no business being inside our bedrooms. If we want to enter into contracts with other consenting adults and call it marriage, you know, whether they're of the same gender or not, or frankly, if it's or even if it's two or more people, that's fine with me. I see no problem with that. So,
well, I can see a, point about not condoning polygamy. Only from a standpoint of women's rights and how it's been abused in that regard.
Yeah, and it has been, and it's been very destructive to some women in some societies. And that's a separate issue.
The possibility of if tax breaks are given for multiple spouses, wouldn't that be encouraging polygamy rather than?
Oh, that would be an interesting one, Jonathan. I got a boogie. Thanks for the call. Very thought provoking. Good to hear from you, and keep listening on RadioPower.org. It's Tom Hartman.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Five SUNY Purchase students and one alumnus are conducting a hunger strike demanding the university's food service provider, Chartwell's, sign a card check agreement allowing 80 workers to unionize and all students charged as a result of a peaceful protest on March 31st be given clemency.
Workers have been upset about low wages, poor benefits, especially health benefits, and they have to buy into a plan, which works out to be about half of their take-home pay every 2 weeks just for single coverage.
John Harto is a union organizer with the Civil Service Employees Association, Local 1000. He describes the incident that sparked the organizing effort.
A woman who was hired as a dishwasher, who was 5 months pregnant, who was forced to unload boxes off of the back of a truck. When she complained that it was too strenuous for her because of her pregnancy, she was told that initially she was only going to be doing it for an hour, but they forced her to do it for the whole day. Subsequently, she miscarried.
Rose Goldstein Bookbinder, a sophomore political science and Spanish major at SUNY, explains what happened on March 31st.
It began as like an educational kind of rally where people could learn about what's going on, and then we followed by marching through the dining hall. We knew that the CEO of Chartwell's was going to be on campus, and we were going to ask him to sign the card check and neutrality agreement, and we went into this room to present him with the petitions and also an award.
Now you
that
think Roberta's
was the top banana award, and it said SUNY Purchase's worst employer. So about 30 of us entered into the room before they blocked it off with police. So we found ourselves just stuck in this room. Them bringing in the police just escalated the situation, and we found ourselves being arrested.
She, Jessie Lear, a junior women's studies major at SUNY Purchase, was approached by cafeteria workers for help with abusive working conditions. He was arrested on April 3rd.
I came to my dorm room. My roommate said the police had just come by. I called the station. They came back and they got me. Finally, after all this time had passed, they told me I was being arrested. I said, why? And they said, for March 31st. And I said, I don't understand. I didn't do anything. Why didn't you arrest me that day or the day after when I met with you or the day since when I repeatedly met with police about protests and about how we can make sure that nobody got arrested? And they said, well, it just wasn't processed till now. And they said that they were being nice to me because they could charge me with inciting a riot. And I said, that's ridiculous because I dispersed the crowd personally when you asked me to. And they said, well, that was too little too late.
He has filed multiple unfair labor practice charges against Chartwell's and is calling for an end to union busting activities and recognition of the union if a neutral third party verifies that a majority have signed union authorization cards. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner in New York.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James
James Madison, we had to let those amendments go. The opium crop was blown away. Let them poppies grow. Thanks to U.S. troops, it's back today. Only goes to show. Go down.
And welcome back. Welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour. My shares today. Yep, Tom Hartman here back with you. Spending soars for children's behavior drugs. It's interesting. I spoke recently at the ADDA conference, ADD, Adult Attention Deficit Disorder Association, and, made the social mistake of saying that I had some concerns about these drugs being given to children. And here we are, the Associated Press today. As more children, an article by Linda A. Johnson out of Trenton, New Jersey, is a Dateline. As more children pop pills for attention deficit and other behavior disorders, new figures show spending on those drugs has, for the first time, edged out the cost of antibiotics and asthma medications for kids. A 49% rise in the use of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder drugs by children under five in the last 3 years contributed to a 23% increase in usage for all children. This is really scary to me. The brain of a developing child is so plastic, so vulnerable to whether it's mercury in the fish or whether it's lead in the paint or whether it's toxins, arsenic in the water, or whether it's whatever it may be. And certainly, I mean, psychoactive drugs are designed to pass through the blood-brain barrier and directly affect the brain. And the brain is plastic. It responds. It as it's growing, it changes. And, it grows in different ways in response to how it's being pressed or pulled or, this way or the other. The most startling change, the article notes, was a 369% increase in spending on attention deficit drugs for children under five. Also, other notes about children's use of these drugs. Antidepressant use rose 21%. That's pretty amazing. Particularly that now that we discover that the studies indicating the correlation between antidepressant use and suicide had been aggressively suppressed isn't quite the right word. Downplayed by the pharmaceutical companies for so long. And drugs given for conduct disorder jumped 71%. Now, what's conduct disorder? Conduct disorder is a fancy way of saying the shrink doesn't like the way the kid's behaving. I mean, here's your solid psychological definition. Conduct disorder is conduct that we don't like. So we're going to give them pharmaceuticals for it? And I know a lot of these kids who are getting drugs for conduct disorders are getting either SSRI antidepressants, tricyclic antidepressants, which kind of slow them down. In some cases, they're getting antipsychotics. And in some cases, they're getting ADHD drugs like methylphenidate, Ritalin, Adderall. 71% increase in conduct disorder drugs. What is going on in our society that so many children need these things, on the one hand, or that we feel such a need to give it to them? I think, here's my take on this. We live in a society that is melting down around the edges in one regard, in that it used to be that a single parent, and I'm not putting this out like dad should work and mom should stay at home. It could be either parent in my world. I don't care. But it used to be that a single parent holding a good single union job could raise a family. I mean, my father ran a tool and die shop in Lansing, Michigan, raised a family of four kids, could raise a family, put aside money for retirement, pay for all of their education, pay for their health care, have a decent standard of living. A decent middle-class standard of living. And you know, you'd have time for family dinners, and you had time for people to hang out together and get to know each other and all that sort of thing. And those days are gone. More than half of all children today come home to an empty house after school because both their parents are working. And it's because of the conservative economic agenda, the Walmartization of America. And that's half of the problem. So we have children who are not having the contact with the connection with their families, the contact with their families that they need for normal and healthy psychological and emotional development. And as a consequence, and not to mention bizarre role models in the media. But frankly, I don't think that the media is the villain here. I think the villain here is conservative economics in terms of the destruction of the American family, number one. And number two, as a result of conservative economics, it is not possible with a high school diploma anymore to get a decent job. You've got to have a college diploma. And in fact, for a lot of kids, even a college diploma isn't enough. There are hotel chains. One of the largest hotel chains in America 2-3 years ago was running ads bragging about the fact that 23% of their bellboys had bachelor's degrees. They thought that that was like, hey, we're really cool. We're upper class. You can stay at our hotel and know you're going to get good service from smart people. Well, to me, what that says is we have a job disaster in this nation. And because people can't get a decent job with a high school diploma like they could in the 50s and 60s when I was growing up, but they have to get into college, and not just into college, but into a good college, not just into a good college, but get good grades, not just get good grades, but in many cases go on to get graduate degrees, the heat is on, the pressure is on. They have to perform. In elementary school, they've got to learn to read by the time they get out of kindergarten. They've got to be at the top of their class by the third grade. And so the parents are going to the psychiatrists and family practitioners and saying, is it true that if my kid takes these drugs, they'll do better in school? And in fact, a lot of studies indicate that they will. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be more emotionally stable as they grow up. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to achieve their full intellectual or emotional, you know, potential, their full evolutionary potential. But it does mean that they can take tests better. So you get this incredible pressure now from parents who are just scared to death that if their kids don't really, really, really make it, that they're going to end up flipping burgers for the rest of their life or working in a Walmart. And it's a very legitimate fear. And the pharmaceutical industry is making billions, with a B, billions off of it. 19 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. By the way, we'll be debating my new book, We the People, on the Michael Medved show. Louise wants me to let you know. I'm not 4 o'clock this afternoon. Is that this afternoon? 4 o'clock this afternoon? Oh, that should be entertaining. Anyhow, 1-866-889-894. Mike in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there as far as our economic culture. And, you know, I mean, if we had tailors, if we had, you know, our local bakers, you know, our local economies, then, you know, not every kid has to be a nuclear whiz, you know, a nuclear scientist. And as far as the ADHD thing, I was just wondering if you'd heard about, I'd heard recently that actually marijuana is supposed to be able to treat that quite well.
Well, you know, there are, I say this only half tongue in cheek. There are a lot of people that I knew growing up in the 60s who were self-medicating their way through high school and college with pot. And, you know, unfortunately, no studies have ever been done, to the best of my knowledge, you know, good, solid studies.
There was a study done in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget the woman's name. She was a doctor, and she...
That's right. I saw her on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, about a month ago.
About a month ago, right?
Yep.
That if you know, the dose, you know, not that they should get stoned. But
right. She was giving low
doses of marijuana would actually help kids concentrate.
Yeah, and she was giving it to them in brownies.
Right.
Yeah, Alice B. Toklas. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, it's so bizarre because of Harry Anslinger. You know, it's funny. I was reading Thomas Jefferson's letters the other day, and he was talking about how who was it? It was either Sam Adams or Tom Paine was overly fond of laudanum. Laudanum. I'm not sure how they pronounced it back then.
It's an opiate, I think.
It is. It's just opium. It was, you know, it was an opium tincture. It's opium with alcohol. And, you know, they sold that stuff over the counter. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson grew hemp. You know, they just, you know, it was there. They took it for granted. It was no big deal. And then in the 30s, we get Harry Anslinger, who's trying to build his empire, you know, and he read the whole reefer madness thing with the DEA. And now as a result of this, look at how many, literally millions of lives we've destroyed, countries we've torn apart, nations that we've wrecked, economies that we've destroyed with this insane war on drugs. It's just...
Well, I think it's because there's the czars of industry and economy that want to be able to micromanage the whole world.
Well, I think that there's two elements here. I think, number one, there's huge profits to be made in the anti-drug end of it. You know, the private prison industry is one of the fastest-growing industries in America. If we were to reform our drug laws to be more like those of, for example, the Netherlands, that industry would vanish. Or, you know, go into a deep recession. And that industry is very politically active. Number two, there's this huge law enforcement industry surrounding it that feeds these people into the prisons. I used to have a friend who was in business back. This was back in the early 70s. And he was making test kits for drugs. You know, how pure is the cocaine? How pure is the pot? You know, what's the THC content and stuff? He originally started marketing this stuff through High Times magazine so that you know, people who were using these things could determine whether they were buying good stuff. And about that time, this was around 76, 77, about that time, companies started drug testing their employees, government started mandating it. So he just kind of seamlessly moved into that business, and it was incredibly profitable for him because he was selling these tests for, you know, $6-$8 through the mail plus $5.95 shipping, and he discovered that the government would pay him $35 a test, and there was 18 cents worth of chemicals in the test. And now, I mean, literally tens of millions of tests like this are given every single month, and it's a $1 billion industry, incredibly profitable. You got the whole military industrial complex. I mean, you know, look at what we're doing in Colombia. Look at the millions of dollars that are spent, all of them in favor of that. So I think number one, there's an economic agenda here with you know, keeping this thing going.
Well, and I wish I could grow marijuana.
Yeah, I agree. And number two, I think that there's a psychological, spiritual, democratic thing, and that is that if you can, I think that people who smoke pot or take, you know, these other kinds of drugs, I think, are more likely to question authority than people who just get drunk.
Right.
And you know, I mean, look back at the founders, right? And so I think that, you know, our society seems to have, the politicians anyway, a desire to encourage drunkenness and discourage drugs that may even enhance in some ways consciousness. And I know that there are people who are going to jump all over me for saying that, but sorry, that's my take on it. That's my experience of it.
Works for me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for the call, Mike. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, 13 minutes before the hour. The tobacco, speaking of drugs, how about George Bush's favorite drug industry? $2.2 million these guys gave to the Republican Party during the 2001-2002 election. Just one company in the tobacco industry. Philip Morris, you know, Altria, it's now called. $2.2 million they gave to the Republican Party. And this, you know, from the wire services today, Altria Group, a tobacco and food company, is asking the Federal Election Commission to approve its plan to run magazine ads contrasting. Yes, when you know when the word contrasting is used, it's going to be an attack ad. Contrasting the policies of President Bush and John Kerry, the likely Democratic presidential nominee. The company says the ads are a nonpartisan voter guide and therefore should be exempt from campaign finance laws that prohibit corporations from contributing to campaigns for federal office. It's expected that within the next month, the Federal Election Commission is going to rule on this thing. Altria is the parent of Philip Morris. Kraft Foods and other companies donated $2.2 million to National Republican Party committees during the 2001-2002 election cycle, the last time parties could accept soft money. It is the third most generous donor to the GOP. This one tobacco company. So, speaking of dangerous drugs, there's a drug more addictive, five times more addictive than heroin, nicotine. Yes, it really and truly is. Five times more addictive than heroin. And more people die of nicotine than any other drug in the United States. It is the only drug. You say, well, alcohol is a terrible drug. A lot of people die from that. Yes, 50,000 people a year, more or less, die from alcohol. Around 400,000 a year from tobacco. But the problem is that when alcohol is used as directed, it doesn't lead to death. When most drugs are used as directed, you take opiates to control pain, doesn't lead to death. When tobacco is used as directed, it does lead to death. And these merchants of death sure do want George Bush to get reelected. They sure do. And the reason, obviously, is clear. Every time he uses the phrase, tort reform, what he's really saying is, make it impossible for the little guy to sue the big corporation that gives me campaign contributions. That's what tort reform means. And the tobacco companies are all over it. Boy, do they want that. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Large numbers of young people are found to be a destabilizing force in developing countries. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Poverty and scarce resources have long been thought to be the driving forces behind most social unrest, but a new study finds a more important factor, young people. Robert Engelman is a vice president of Population Action International, a nonprofit group that conducted the study.
Those countries were much more inclined to have a higher risk of conflict if they also had high proportions of young people, specifically young men. Societies that had more than about 40% of their adult population in the age group from 15 to 29 were significantly more prone to conflict.
Engelman says that youth bulge becomes even more dangerous when it concentrates in cities.
We also found another connection that we really hadn't anticipated, which was the speed of urban population growth. When urban populations are growing by about 3% or so, which quite a few urban populations are in the developing world, those countries were much more likely to be experiencing conflict.
Engelman says countries like Haiti, Somalia, and Colombia have the most dangerous combinations of risk factors.
And the countries that were most vulnerable to conflict were countries that had all three of these factors working against them. Significant proportions of young people, significant scarcities of either cropland or water, and significantly rapid urban population growth.
The Population Action Study urges international aid programs to target more help for societies with a youth bulge. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's that attention deficit disorder stuff. It's got me. Four minutes before the hour. Special greeting, by the way, to our listeners on the cable radio network, CRN, who are listening on their televisions. Interesting. A new distribution channel we have here. 4 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and John in Hershey, Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, greetings, Tom.
Thank you.
I just want to say in regards to your last segment, I'm fortunate enough to pee for enjoyment and not employment.
Okay. You're not having to be, in other words, you're not a pilot, you're not a federal employee, you're not a...
No.
You don't get drug tested.
No. The Medicare House vote, have you looked into that at all? I saw a special a few weeks ago on Bill Moyers on the pre-dawn vote that occurred in the House.
Yeah, we had Bernie Sanders is on our show every week, and he gave us a blow-by-blow. The thing, you know, never in history, I mean, typically they close a vote after 15 minutes, and never in the history, the 220-some-odd year history of the House of Representatives, has a vote been held open for 3 hours. The vote took place at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then you got this Michigan congressman who claims that he was offered a bribe, and they're still investigating it. I mean, nothing's going to come out of it until after the elections, but it looks like Denny Hastert might have committed a federal felony.
Even approaching senior age, I'm outraged at just the way this whole vote happened and was allowed to go on in the floor of the House.
Yeah, well, and not only that, they were given wrong information. I mean, you had a guy who was the making almost $750,000 a year as the president of the for-profit hospital association. You know, the group of hospitals like Bill Frist's family empire that made Bill Frist a multimillionaire. And he quits his job and takes a civil service job, you know, with a dramatic reduction in pay, as the head of Medicare, helps write this law that says that you can't have hospitals compete with each other, you can't have pharmaceuticals companies compete with each other, government's just got to hand them the cash. The law gets passed in that vote that you're talking about, and then he quits his job with the government and goes back to being a lobbyist. I mean, how bizarre is that?
So
yeah, it's a huge benefit for HMOs and prescription drug companies.
Yeah, this is not democracy, John. This is a kleptocracy that's happened. John, thanks for the call. I got to move along. It's the end of the show, actually. But thanks for calling in. Good to hear from you. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for putting together our music. Thanks to Jay for composing and performing our theme music. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to Michael Toth for our chat rooms. Ben for the archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Shelby for RadioPower.org. And thanks to you for listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Tom Hartman. I'll be here then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.